From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, we continue our holiday week series of music interviews. First, we'll hear from Tom York of the band Radiohead. Last year, Spin magazine named Radiohead's 1997 CD, OK Computer, the number one album of the past 20 years. Also, we'll talk with Stuart Murdoch, the lead singer, songwriter, and co-founder of the band Bell and Sebastian. First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross with another edition in our Holiday Week series of music interviews. Up first today, we have Thom Yorke, the main songwriter and lead singer of the British band Radiohead. When rock critics write about Radiohead, they often use the words best and greatest. A review in Time magazine was headlined, "Radiohead may just be the best band in the world." Last year, Spin magazine named their 1997 album OK Computer the top album of the past 20 years. Radiohead's latest album, Hail to the Thief, came out 3 years ago. They're currently at work on their seventh album. This year, Thom Yorke came out with a solo album called The Eraser, which he and the band's longtime producer, Nigel Godrich, made largely on computers. New York Times music critic John Pareles put it on his year's top 10 list. Let's start with a track from Radiohead's OK Computer. This is Paranoid Android. When I spoke with Thom Yorke in July, I asked him about the difference between OK Computer and Radiohead's earlier albums, Pablo Honey and The Bends.
When we did The Bends, we were still figuring out, I think, the basics even of how to make records. And in the process of doing that, we met Nigel, who was the engineer on it, who then went and did OK Computer with us and has stayed with us. And then when we did OK Computer, I think the difference was that it was like the kids being let loose in the lab. You know, that's how it felt. I mean,
what were you trying that you hadn't tried before?
Well, we bought all our own equipment from some of the proceeds from the bands, and it was all transportable. And so, it you know, the equipment and the concept of recording became part of the creative process rather than something that was happening in another room over there and we were just told to do it again. So we were trying everything we could think of, really within limits. I guess since then that's got a little bit out of hand.
So were your musical tastes changing at about this time?
They're always changing and we're always listening to different things. Well, I mean, one of the most important things about being in a band, other than just playing together, obviously, is actually what music you're sharing, what music you're choosing to play to each other. And around that time, there was a serious sort of Ennio Morricone obsession going on in the band, which really obviously fed across into the way we were recording.
And yet there's no Whistler?
No, but there's a lot of pathetic attempts to sort of do similar sort of things. You know, I mean, we bought an old Mellotron and, you know, we're using lots of those sort of soft distortion, like old, you know, deliberately trying to sort of emulate old recordings, which Nigel's especially good at, old recording techniques and stuff, you know.
Well, the track I thought we'd play from OK Computer is No Surprises. Do you want to say anything about writing this?
That's one of the songs that we refer to a lot because just in terms of when we're in the midst of a song and we don't know whether we're just completely wasting our time. And No Surprises was like that all the way through. It was just, I don't know about this. I mean, yes, it's a beautiful song, but it just seemed to be too much. And then we're gradually sort of chipping away at trying lots and lots of different things. And then it's amazing how as soon as you just got a little bit of distance from it, as we're finishing the record and placing it in the record, how powerful it was, really, considering how difficult it was to make. The nice thing about it, I think, is that you kind of forget about all the hard stuff. You forget about how difficult it is to do things. Nigel's very fond of reminding me of that.
on No Surprises, was there anything that any moment where you realized, okay, this is actually a good track, this works?
It was, as often happens, it was actually sort of finally getting a vocal that made sense. Because it was so slow, and we had to do sort of, we physically couldn't play it that slow. So it's we used the old Beatles technique of record it at the natural speed you want to play it and slow it down and get this sort of strung out effect. And then singing to that was quite a weird experience.
All right, well, let's hear the results. This is No Surprises from OK Computer.
You look so happy. Bring down the government. They don't speak for us.
That's No Surprises from the Radiohead album OK Computer, and my guest is Tom York.
Hi.
I'm wondering if... I've read this, and I know it's no secret that you've had...
I have no secrets.
...an issue with depression over the years.
Oh, that secret.
That secret, yes. So how do you think that's affected you as a songwriter or a singer? Just in terms of, like, you know, your subject matter or your tempos or, you know, the kind of mood you're going for... Mm-hmm.
I think it's both destructive and highly creative, and in some ways it's a blessing, because when you're in the midst of it, you hear things and see things in a different way. I mean, actually, some people do literally see things in a different way. Some people, the things actually do actually get darker, and sounds actually change, and blah blah blah. And I find that it's a in a way, it's you know, my brain is set to receive other things, and you know, the trouble with it is really that it's debilitating as well, because you have a problem. You don't have energy. You don't have, in order to, especially in a band, actually, but just generally to be creative, you need to have a lot of energy. You can't just, you know, and so you can be extremely negative. But it's really not a big deal. But at the same time, I mean, I choose to talk about it publicly, because I've always had a problem with the fact that people call music depressing, because it's like, what, you don't get depressed? What, your whole life is roses, is it? You know, that to me is like, you are in denial, and you are the one with the problem. I mean, I want to go out and I listen to disco music. I go to, you know, I do this stuff, but it just so happens that I'm built to do this. This is what I do. I mean, that's fine. But, you know, and I think that's why, I chose to make a thing out of it, because it was just really annoying me.
I know that after or during the OK Computer tour, which ended up being like a really long tour, and it sounds like you had real trouble toward the end of it. That
there was just a general madness going on, and it started out as being fun. And then cease to be fun and cease to be relevant to the music, I think.
From what I read, it sounds like there were times on stage during that tour when you were kind of unraveling.
Yeah, that was weird. I mean, I don't know quite why. I think a lot of the shows were very big, and it was not interesting. And mostly, it was just not interesting. It just got boring, which sounds incredibly selfish, but. Why would you just carry on playing these tunes? I mean, you know, the trouble with it was that by the time we'd done that record, we were so sick of those tunes. And then you're faced with the prospect of, like, having to play them for another year and a half, which, you know, you got to do because you've got to let people know what it's about, and one of the things that we're good at is playing the tunes and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it just sort of comes a point where it's like this is you're going through the motions, and as soon as you realize I am going through the motions, this is sounding tired, that's it. You know, there is kind of no point in you, it's rock and roll, there's no point in you being there. It's like it ceases to be rock and roll and just becomes some sort of dodgy circus.
So did you feel like you were basically forced into the position of being phony because you were no longer feeling the songs with the same intensity, and yet you had to play them as if you did?
Well, that was the thing for me. I refused to sort of stand on stage and pretend I was really into it when I wasn't. So I would stand there on stage for about half a minute, looking at the audience, going, "Not really into this," because that was me trying not to be fake about it.
But of course, that's a real insult to the people who paid a lot of money to come hear
you. But it's like, but then, well, what do you want? Do you want me to be genuine, or do you want me to just pretend? Which do you want? You know, the genuine thing for me to do at this point would just to get on a train and go home.
My guest is Tom York of the band Radiohead. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Tom York of Radiohead. He's the band's main songwriter and lead singer. This year he came out with a solo CD called The Eraser. Well, I want to play another track, and this is from your album Kid A.
Hurrah.
And I thought we could play Idiotech.
Hurrah! I like that one.
You got a real, like, electronic thing going on here. When did you start getting interested in electronic instruments? And I've been really wondering if you went back and listened to a lot of, like, the early electronic avant-garde music of, say, the 60s.
Did actually. I mean, the things I was really, really into at college was electronic music. I was massively into it.
Like what kind? Were you?
All the Detroit techno stuff that was coming out. And I was getting, I mean, I don't know what it was, half of it, you know. And there was all this sort of British answer to it as well. There's the Warp label. And they were coming out with just amazing stuff. I mean, the reason it was amazing was because I was DJing every Friday at college. And the stuff that sounded the most exciting coming out of the speakers was not the rock music. It was this minimal techno. It just sounded fantastic coming out of your Technics 1200s that the needle's a bit damaged and the speakers are kind of blowing up and you've had a little bit too much to drink and some twit is asking for the Pogues again. So you just whack on, like, some Warp record really loud and just clear the dance floor. But you are having the best time, and that was my sort of formative thing with electronic. It wasn't actually sort of Kraftwerk. And I knew that was the reference point, and I had Autobahn, but I didn't know, you know, the real history behind Kraftwerk at all. You know, I came to it all backwards, as one does. And then I got really heavily back into it after OK Computer because I'd absolutely had enough of rock music, predictably enough. You know, I hadn't had enough of being in the band, but I'd had enough of those sounds. OK Computer was a very consciously acoustic record, using acoustic spaces very, very deliberately, hardly using any fake reverbs, using real reverbs and real room sounds, putting mics in the wrong end of the room and all this sort of stuff. We'd all read this book on how recording music had changed the way music was, since it was coming out of speakers and it wasn't live. And the logical conclusion of this book was electronic music to me. It was like this is, you know, if you put a microphone in something in front of something and then you play it out of a speaker, there's all this extra distance between what's really happening and you. And what was so exciting about electronic music is it's like literally there's no distance between the music and the speaker. It's just straight out the speaker. There's nothing else there at all.
No, I could see you being really interested in this, and then you could create this, you know, like electronic environment that you could then sing over.
Yeah.
What about the guitarist and the bass player in your band? How did they feel about it?
It was a bit of a brain mash. They were definitely not into it to begin with. But at the same time, you know, the recordings didn't really end up like that. I mean, both Kid A and Amnesiac were lots and lots of different stuff. I mean, there's been a bit of focus on, that's when they went all electronic. Well, okay, you could say the first song on Kid A, Everything in Its Right Place, is electronic. But, you know, we'd actually tried it every other way and it didn't work. And that's how it worked. So that's that. You know, it wasn't like, yes, now we are making electronic record. You are either with me or you are against me. It wasn't really like that.
Okay, well, let's hear Idiotech. From Kid A, this is Radiohead, and my guest is Tom York. That's Radiohead from their CD, Kid A. So we were talking a little bit about your kind of electronic or electronica influence there.
Yes.
And you have a solo CD. It's not Radiohead. It's a Tom York CD. And that's very electronica influenced. So did you feel freer to head in that direction without the other musician?
Yeah, I wanted to do... Doing electronic music is a very, can be a very mono experience. It's like you're just sitting there and you're looking at a computer, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's not fun for a group of musicians to sit in a room and watch a screen. It's not very interesting, really. And if you work... well, I mean, in this case, it was very much a collaboration between me and Nigel. And when you're just sort of sitting there, and there's only two of you, there was very little discussion going on. You're just doing it, which, you know, when it's electronic music, seems to make quite a lot of sense, really. I mean, that's the case when we were doing Kid A as well. I mean, lots of the stuff on that was just, well, there'd be one or two people involved, and. It's just in this particular instance, we were taking a break and said, I really want to just go off and try doing something on my own. Just, I want to know what it feels like, you know. I mean, that doesn't mean that we're never going to do that stuff again either. And in fact, I think one of the interesting things about it was just how, you know, you have to work on intuition, and it was done very quickly and very fast, and you get your sense of instinct sort of back on things, and hopefully that'll feed well into working with a band. Well, it is doing already, really.
Well, Tom York, thank you so much. Thanks, for talking,
Terry.
With us.
That was cool.
Tom York is the main songwriter and lead singer of the band Radiohead. I spoke with him in July. This year he released a solo CD called The Eraser. Here's a track from it called Atoms for Peace. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Support for NPR comes from Audible.com, where you can download and listen to Fresh Air, in addition to audiobooks, magazines, and newspapers. Audible.com/freshair. From the Kellogg Foundation, helping people help themselves by investing in children, their families, and their communities. On the web at WKKF.org. And from Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting The Good German, a new film by Steven Soderbergh, starring George Clooney, Cate Blanchett, and Tobey Maguire, now playing. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, Stuart Murdoch, lead singer, songwriter, and co-founder of the band Belle and Sebastian.
Well, look at the kid from school. He's teaching mamas and papas how to be a little cool. He's changing fashion the way he dressed. Attracted to old and the hoodies where the money for the kid with the will to funk. He dances in secret. He's a part-time punk. Now she's getting off the plane. She wants to write a thesis on the population and the privilege the kids fighting up the lane. The shoplifting, just drifting like the switchblade and the crossbar of this trouble. She's got the moves. She's taken an elementary class in Kung Fu. A lamp I'm washing in the laundrette. You can put some money on it. You can place a little bet that when I see my wife, the black will be grey and the white will be grey, but the blues are still blue. I'm crying now for my mom. If the melody don't go on.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Since the band Belle and Sebastian formed 10 years ago in Glasgow, Scotland, they've developed a cult following. A Washington Post review described the band's latest CD, The Life Pursuit, as a terrific pop album. In a review of that CD in the online music magazine Pitchfork, Mark Hogan wrote, "Spanning glam, soul, country, and 70s AM rock, this record is a deceptively wry, wickedly tuneful testament to the fragile beauty of faith, in deities as well as in pop." My guest is the co-founder of Belle and Sebastian, Stuart Murdoch. He sings and writes most of the songs. When the band started out, he declined to speak to the press, but that changed a few years ago. Here's a track from The Life Pursuit called Another Sunny Day.
¶¶
sunny day, I met you up in the garden. You were digging blinds, I thought you beg your pardon. I took a photograph of you in the herbaceous border. It broke the heart of men and flowers and girls and trees. Another rainy day, we're trapped inside with the train set. Chocolate on the boil, steamy windows when we met. You got the attic window looking out on the cathedral. And on a Sunday evening, bells ring out in the dusk.
I spoke to Stuart Murdoch earlier this year when Belle and Sebastian were on tour in the U.S. I asked him how he started writing songs.
Well, to be quite honest, I had a busy period when I was younger. I was at college and I was DJing and I was working as a roadie and working in a record shop. And then I actually got unwell and I had to give up all these pursuits one by one over a period of time. And then... for quite a few years, in fact, for 7 years, I was pretty much out of the game. And it was during this period that that I found a lot of solace in being able to write a song.
So I had read a reference to CFS, chronic fatigue syndrome. Is that what you had?
Yes, pretty much. It was all sorts of post-viral difficulties. It was a major drag, as you could imagine.
Well, it must have been really awful to go from having this life where you're a DJ in clubs and, you know, living this really interesting life, going to all the record stores, and then you're, like, stuck at home. Did you move back in with your parents?
Yes, I had to. I moved back with my folks, and they put up with me, and pretty much I shed, like you said, I shed everything for all my friends and activities. Not because I wanted to, but simply because I had to.
Well, it must be hard to start something new and difficult, like writing songs when you're sick.
It felt like the one major thing that I had. When I started to do it, I realized that this could be a way out, and this could almost make up for what was happening to me.
Well, I'd like to play a song that that you wrote that's on the first CD, the first Belle and Sebastian CD, Tiger Milk. And, of course, I don't really know which songs you wrote because you don't include songwriter credits on the CDs. Why not?
I'm not really sure. It just at the time, it just seemed unimportant.
Well... Did you write Expectations?
Yes.
Good. That's the one I was going to play. So,
good.
So we'll listen to that. Do you want to say anything about writing the song? I mean, it's a story song. It's a character song, and I mean, I think of you in the song carrying on the tradition of, say, Ray Davies from the Kinks and Randy Newman. Of, you know, it's not a confessional song. It's not about you. It's about a character.
That's right. I have great fun with these characters, especially. Painting a character, someone who I would have thought was pretty hip at the time, and you sort of bring them to life in your imagination.
So you thought they were pretty hip at the time you were writing the song?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So this is about somebody who makes life-size models of the Velvet Underground in clay.
wouldn't that be fantastic? And this is because I imagine back to being, you know, much younger. And that time, you love it when you're looking up towards the people in your class or in your school that are obviously way cooler than you, and you're wondering what goes on in their mind. And I just imagine this figure who was you know, modelling the Velvet Underground and had this project and this obsession, and I didn't even know who the Velvet Underground were.
But, okay. Well, let's hear it. This is from the first Belle and Sebastian album, Tiger Milk, and this is Expectations.
Thank you.
gotta go to school. Tell your mum what to expect. She said it's right out of the blue. Do you wanna work at Debenhams? Cause that's what they expect. Starting lingerie and Doris is your supervisor. And the head said that you always were a queer one from the start. For careers you say you wanna be remembered for your art. Your obsession gets you known throughout the school for being strange, making life-size models of the Velvet Underground in clay. In the queue for lunch they take the piss, you got no appetite. And the rumour is you never go with boys and you are tight. So they jab you with a fork, you drop the tray and go berserk. While you're cleaning up the mess, the teacher's looking up your skirt. Hey, you've been used. Are you calm? Settle down. Write a song, I'll sing along. Soon you will know that you are sane. You're on top of the world again.
That's Belle and Sebastian. The song Expectations that we just heard was on their first album, Tiger Milk. It was written and sung by my guest, Stuart Murdoch. This seems to be really influenced by the group Love.
This is one of the groups, along with perhaps an American group called The Left Bank, and also a group called The Lovin' Spoonful,
mm-hmm.
And the English group The Zombies. Now, there's four groups that mm-hmm. that our group all revered.
I can see why.
Yeah, terrific.
Now, so here this is, it's your first album, and you have like strings on it, there's a trumpet. Did you have friends who could play those instruments in a rock setting, in a pop setting?
Well, I didn't know I had friends until... well, I quite honestly didn't know these people. They became my friends, but the story of the first LP was that I'd been trying to find these people for so long.
Well, people who you could make music with and felt connected to?
Absolutely. During the points in my, when I wasn't feeling so good. And then all of a sudden, in this one period of time, and it was when I was just about to leave Scotland to actually move to California to try my luck there, that I was asked to produce the Tiger Milk LP for a local college. And it was at that point that that I met the people that were to make the record.
Now, doesn't this record have something to do with some kind of competition?
That's right. The college in Glasgow, Stowe College, every year they sponsored a group or an artist to make a record. And so this year they somehow got hold of a demo tape of mine, and they asked me to make the record. I think that was the inspiration for, well, it seemed to be the thing that brought these musicians together rather quickly. It was very fateful.
So getting back to the idea that there's like strings, trumpet on this CD, did you hear those sounds in your head? I mean, when you wrote the song, did you say, this needs a violin and a trumpet, and this is what they need to be playing? Did you hear the song that way in your mind?
Yes, absolutely. If there was one thing about the sound of the fledgling Belle and Sebastian that I wanted, it was that the trumpet should be as important as the guitar, that the cello should be as important as the piano, and etc., and that I should form a small compact baroque unit that would be able to play great pop lines.
My guest is Stuart Murdoch, the lead singer and songwriter of the band Belle and Sebastian. Their latest CD is called The Life Pursuit. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Stuart Murdoch, the lead singer and songwriter of the band Bell and Sebastian. Their latest CD is called The Life Pursuit. So when you were getting started and you're a band from Glasgow, did it help to be in Glasgow itself? Did it help to be a local band, or was that held against you?
Well, we didn't really care about what anybody else thought. Mm-hmm. We definitely felt as a group that we were deeply unfashionable. The sort of people that came together for the group that were misfits. They weren't hip at all in my book. But I think that helped in a way because we banded together and we didn't want anything to do with any of the other groups around at the time.
What made you feel unhip?
Well, it probably just healthy paranoia. At the time, I can remember getting up in parties and I cringe when I think of it now, and almost forcing people to listen to songs that I'd written, you know, playing acoustically. And I can remember people sort of talking up their sleeves and thinking, oh, I wish this guy would shut up, or I wish this guy would go away. There was a distinct feeling in the Glasgow of this period that all the great music had been done, so why bother? You know, all these great records from the 60s had been made, so, you know, it was impertinent even to try and write another song. But this fueled me deeply. This made me want to make the most terrific records that I could imagine.
Well, the same year that you released your first album, Tiger Milk, 1996, you also released an album it came out the same year, and I want to play something from that album. It's called If You're Feeling Sinister. And the track I want to play, did you write Judy and the Dream of Horses?
Yes, I wrote pretty much all the early stuff, yes.
Okay, well,
yes,
good.
I wrote Judy. Yeah.
Good. This is a great song, and one of the things I find interesting about it as a record is that it starts out sounding like it's almost going to be like a Gilberto or Jobim bossa nova, and then the mood changes, and then, you know, the trumpet comes in. And so when I listen to your music, I just hear all these interesting different influences coming together to create your songs. Were you interested in bossa nova?
Not really. I was more interested in perhaps the second half of the, when it explodes into bubblegum pop. perhaps it still sounds a bit folky, that record. I think we could have a better go at it now. I mean, we were quite naive in our early days of production, but I always heard Judy as being a bit of bubblegum pop.
Let's hear it. This is Judy and the Dream of Horses from the Bell and Sebastian CD, If You're Feeling Sinister.
Judy, let's go for a walk. We can kiss and do whatever you want, but you will be disappointed. You will fall asleep with thoughts in your pants. You're just trying to find and keep the dream of horses. And the song she wrote was Judy and the Dream of Horses. Dream of Horses. Dream of Horses. Dream of Horses. The best looking boys are taken. The best looking. Another song about your dream of horses. Write a song about your dream of horses. Call it Judy and the Dream of Horses. Call it Judy and the Dream of Horses. Your dream of horses. Da-da-da-da.
That's Judy and the Dream of Horses from the Bill and Sebastian CD, If You're Feeling Sinister, from 1996. My guest Stuart Murdoch sang it and wrote the song. And they have a new CD, which is called The Life Pursuit. Now, before we heard this track, you said that you were really thinking of bubblegum pop. When you think bubblegum, who do you think of?
Oh, I'm just thinking of something like Sugar Sugar by the Arches.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is basically, I mean, that's my taste. That's the kind of song I just love. I love just turning on the radio, hearing classic hits from the 60s and 70s.
You know, I'm interested in how songs come to you. You know, again, you didn't start writing songs until you were, what, in your early 20s? Would that be it about?
Probably about right 24 even, yes.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Which is kind of old in a way. Like a lot of people who write songs are writing songs in their teens, and there's always original music going through their head. When you decided you wanted to write songs, was it an act of will that you like sat down and thought, I'm going to write a song, and did you just like consciously craft it, or was there just like music coming to you in your head?
Yes, well, I would say it certainly wasn't an act of will, and what came to me at first was a desperation to communicate in some way or form, and it was really through words, and it was almost just by accident that I found that instead of simply writing bad poetry, that you could write bad poetry with some melody attached, and then you could get away with it.
Did you write poetry when you were in high school or college?
Well, no, not really. It just, this, you know, urge just came to me a few years after I'd gotten sick. But in a sense, you know, pop music is bad poetry with a sweetener. And so this is what I found out. I sat down at the piano and I formed my first bad poem with a melody, and then I never looked back.
My guest is Stuart Murdoch, the lead singer and songwriter of the band Belle and Sebastian. Their latest CD is called The Life Pursuit. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Stuart Murdoch, the lead singer and songwriter of the band Belle and Sebastian. Now, you used to live above a church, and you were the church's caretaker. You did this for how many years?
Maybe about 7 or 8 years.
Mm-hmm. And this was, place this for us chronologically. This was after you had recovered from the chronic fatigue. Were you already recording?
This was precisely at the time that the group came together. I guess I'd been, you know, living from sort of room to room around Glasgow and just, you know, getting on with my sort of gloomy existence up to a point. And then I attended a church, and the minister knew that I didn't really have a permanent place to stay, and he offered that I should stay in the church building, the church hall, and look after the premise and not pay rent. So it was a nice arrangement where I did this job and I lived there for free. And this was at exactly the same time that the group came together at the January 1996, which was a couple of months before Tiger Moat was recorded.
So what was it like to live above a church? I mean, did you feel the specialness of the, you know, the, like some churches in particular have a very either spiritual or at least beautiful and in some situations ancient or old feeling about them. I don't know what kind of church this was, whether this was a little corner church or, you know, a beautiful and very old church.
Yes, well, there was a mixture of that. There was the main church building, which was just 100 yards up the street. And this was the smaller building where all the clubs and societies used to meet, and they had sort of social gatherings in the hall. And so it was busy all the time with the groups, with the old ladies coming in to drink their coffee in the morning, or the mothers and toddlers coming in the afternoon. And there would be bridge clubs and choirs and drama clubs and cubs and scouts. And so it was busy, it was social, and I must admit, I liked it, and I there was a special atmosphere from the place, and I didn't take that for granted. I used to, you know, when I was cleaning up at night and everybody had gone, and the huge hall had a special atmosphere with the street light coming in, and I loved that.
Well, I thought I'd play a song that I'm assuming you wrote, and you can tell me if you did.
Yeah.
It's called "If You Find Yourself Caught in Love." And, you know, it's a song that certainly acknowledges religion. Did you write this one?
Yes, I did. Uh-huh.
Do you want to talk about the song a little bit?
Yes, it is a bit of a funny one, because it has a certain gospel sort of hint to it. And it's something at the time when I was writing it, I thought, oh, should I be so overt? Because I've often sort of couched any religious overtones in, you know, within characters or something like that in the past, but this is a bit more out there. And and then I just thought, come on, we've been doing this for years, why not, you know, why not just be a bit more straightforward?
Was it hard to figure out a way to get some acknowledgement of God in a song without it sounding like Christian rock?
Yes, it's a fine line, isn't it? I mean, I don't mean to be down on Christian rock, but it's not my cup of tea. So I guess you just got to do what you feel all the time. Be led by taste. You have to do what you like.
Uh-huh. Okay, so this is from the Belle and Sebastian CD, "Dear Catastrophe Waitress." The song is "If You Find Yourself Caught in Love, Say a Prayer to the Man Above."
If you find yourself caught in love, say a prayer to the man above. Thank him for everything you know. You should thank him for every breath you blow. If you find yourself caught in love, say a prayer to the man above. Thank him for every day you pass. You should thank him for saving your sorry ass. Single but looking out, you must raise your prayer to a shout. Another partner must be found, someone to take your life beyond. Another TV, I love 1999. Just one more box of cheaper wine. If you find yourself caught in love, say a prayer to the man above. But if you don't listen to the voices, then my friend, you'll soon run out of choices. What a pity it would be, 'cause you talk of freedom, don't you see? The only freedom that you'll ever really know is written in books from long ago. Give up your will to him, the thoughts you think will change. I'm not saying overnight, you've got to start somewhere. Stop by kidding on your care.
That's "If You Find Yourself Caught in Love" from the Belle and Sebastian CD, "Dear Catastrophe Waitress." My guest Stuart Murdoch wrote and sung that song, and they have a new CD now. So let's try to bring ourselves up to date a little bit. You're no longer living above the church. Do you live in Glasgow?
No. Yes, I actually just moved out of the church last year.
Last year, wow. What was it like when fans must have known you lived there. So, and it's certainly got to be an easy place to find.
Yes, well, I think our fans have always been very respectful,
mm-hmm.
of the group. So that's been nice from the start. And whenever we have, you know, run into fans, or whenever the fans have come to the church, which has happened quite regularly, they get a little bit more than they bargained for, because perhaps they want to creep in and sit quietly in one of the pews at the back and maybe spot me from afar or whatever. But they get pounced on by the congregation, by the ladies in the church, and they have to come and drink tea and sign the sign the visitor's book and explain where they're from. So they're made welcome.
Well, Stuart Murdoch, thank you very much for talking with us.
It's been a pleasure.
Stuart Murdoch is the lead singer and songwriter of the band Bell and Sebastian. I spoke with him in March. Bell and Sebastian's latest CD is called The Life Pursuit. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Ian Chillog, Patty Leswing, Sam Brigger, Jonathan Menhivar, and Joan Tui Westman. Our technical supervisor is Joyce Lieberman. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from Barnes & Noble, publishers of the Barnes & Noble Classics Edition of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, in stores and online at bm.com. From the Annenberg Fund for Excellence in Communications and Education, and from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
1, 2, 3,
On the next Fresh Air, our holiday week series of music interviews continues with Andre Benjamin, a.k.a. Andre 3000, of the hip-hop group OutKast, and the godfather of punk, Iggy Pop. Join us for the next Fresh Air.